history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some pretty incredible stories out there just waiting for you to ask a few of the right questions and take the time to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot, we're educated, entertained, and oftentimes inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I know that all of those are going to apply today to a conversation with Oscar Rice, 95 years old, of Denver, Colorado, but originally from the suburbs of Munich, Germany. And this is a story that's going to take us from the Holocaust to army decorations in World War II to the cutting edge of science. And if you're a male over 50, this man has probably impacted your life in a way that you would not even expect. But hopefully we'll have time to cover most of this. Let's start out early on, sir. You were born in Germany, one of three children in your family?
Yeah.
You had a brother and a sister?
Brother and sister.
Jewish family in the suburbs of Munich?
Well, actually, I was born in Bad Dürkheim, 20 miles from our Rammstein.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
But where'd you grow up?
In Munich. And then we moved to Munich in 1923 because the recession was so bad, there was no way to earn a living in the Rhineland.
What do you remember about your childhood? What kinds of things did you do?
Interestingly enough, I went, of course, to a Catholic grammar school run by the Benedictine sisters. But then Hitler, in 33 or 4, decreed that Jews could not go to ordinary, had to go to Jewish schools.
Uh-huh.
So then I went to an Orthodox Jewish school in Munich. And then after that, after I graduated, I went to Altes Real Gymnasium, which is the same thing as a high school, but much more advanced. By the way, I think Albert Einstein went to the same school.
Oh, really?
High school. So until Hitler gave in the full power, till 35, 36, there was no problem go to the school. But the Hitler Youth started to really harass me, us, the Jewish people, in wintertime, they throw snowballs at us that had an accident.
Mm.
And I went to school in a bicycle. They were in the air of the bicycle, ruining the bicycles too. And then one of the Hitler Youth that sat behind me was carrying a long knife, stick the knife in my back and said, when there were tests, especially math tests, where I was very good at, let's change tests.
Wow.
So my mother, father said, you got to get out of here. So I applied both for a visa to the United States and for a visa to go to Palestine.
Uh-huh.
And I had a very close friend, high school friend, which played chess. When I got the visa to come to the United States, I wanted to go with him, of course. But my mother says, you're going to the United States. So at 17, in those days, you don't disagree with your parents.
Well, yeah. But they're telling you it's not safe for you here. You have to go to America. You don't speak any English.
Yeah.
So you're sailing across the Atlantic Ocean.
But she knew where I was going because her aunt, who sponsored me, had connections with the ag school I went to.
An ag school that's now called Delaware Valley
University.
What you studied there was how to be a dairyman, right?
Well, that was my major. I also learned how to do other work, like to plow fields and spray orchard. They had five different departments.
Uh-huh.
What helped me with my English was the head of floriculture had got his degree from Heidelberg University and was fluent in German.
Uh-huh.
So as long as I was with him in the department, he helped me with my language.
So you picked up English pretty quick.
Yes. In 6 months, I was all right.
So you're over here. Your whole family is still in Germany. You're studying at this basically agricultural school, National Farm School it was called then. You end up getting out of there and running a dairy. But over this time period, how often did you hear from your family back home?
Very rarely, very rarely.
You had to be concerned about him, knowing what Hitler was about.
Of course. Then I asked my aunt to also give him visas, and she applied for it. But by the time the mail got to my parents, the American embassy in Stuttgart had closed because of the war, and there was nothing to be done anymore, that she couldn't do anything anymore.
And if your parents had waited a year, 2 years longer, you might not have made it to America.
Right.
But your little sister did.
Yeah. She went through southern France. But she was so traumatized, she didn't remember how the whole thing happened.
And we'll come back around to that. But I just want to establish that, that your parents had the foresight to help you and flee this situation, but they were stuck there.
And my sister, because we had relatives in Alsace-Lorraine, and they sent my sister, after the war has broken out, to Alsace-Lorraine. And then she went to southern France, around Marseille somewhere, and came to the United States.
Yeah, so here you've graduated from this university, and now you're running a dairy farm in Maryland, not far from Washington, D.C. In fact, you're delivering 250 gallons of milk into Washington, D.C., so I'm sure Congress loved you. And you did that for a couple years. They didn't need you for the war. They needed you in that job. And then when you decided that you might want to get in this war and go fight the man who's persecuting your family and so many others, they said, no, you can't. You're an enemy.
Yeah.
You have no idea what's happened to your family, right?
No, right. Absolutely no idea.
And you've got both your parents and your brother that are still back there.
And my grandparents.
And your grandparents.
All my grandparents.
And I can't imagine what that feels like, to be completely cut off and no idea and knowing that people are being persecuted and horrible things are happening. So then your sister comes, and that had to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, and she needed help. She arrived in Philadelphia. Our family just took care of her till I could get to Philadelphia.
And you quit your job to go there and help take care of her. And she ended up with a very successful career in the clothing business.
Women's clothing business, yeah.
But by 1943, they decide, oh, we changed our mind. We need some bodies now.
Well, the reason is that I worked in the creamery, so I wasn't essential anymore.
So since you stopped working at the creamery, you didn't have an exemption anymore?
Well, I don't know. I just got a letter from the draft board.
Uh-huh.
We report for induction.
But you're still not a U.S. citizen.
Nope.
You go into the Army. You're training.
Fort McCallum.
So you're out there shooting a machine gun?
Yeah.
And what did they do? They had you change targets real fast or something?
Yeah.
And they noticed how good you were at that?
Yeah.
Because you were real sharp in math. You could make the adjustments. Yeah. And so then they came to talk to you?
Yeah.
And they heard your accent?
Yeah.
What happened then?
Well, he said, we need you in Germany.
He realized you spoke German?
Yeah, fluent German. He says, we need you in Germany.
And he meant right then?
Right there. And he says, we can't send you because you're not a citizen. We got to make you a citizen.
So how'd they do that?
Well, they took me to the courthouse in Anniston, Alabama. The colonel went to see the judge and explained the situation to him. After I had filled out all the forms, I went into in the judge's chamber. And the judge looked at me and says, do you know anything about the Constitution? And I waved my pamphlet the Army had given me and says, yes, I've read it. And he said, you're a citizen.
Just like that.
And 3 weeks later, I was in Germany.
3 weeks later.
Yeah.
That's how badly they needed you. So they put you in the 79th Infantry Division.
Yeah.
You got there right as the Battle of the Bulge is going on,
right? Yeah, right. We were protecting the right flank of Patton's.
Uh-huh.
In the Battle of the Bulge.
Now, you had grown up in Germany. I know. I'm sure you'd had some rough winters.
Oh, yeah.
But what was that like, that winter of 44?
Digging a foxhole was terrible. It wasn't nice, let me put it this way. But I managed all right. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, I told all my companions to not call me Oscar, my first name, because it's so Germanic. I used my middle name, Kully, K-U-L-L-Y.
Uh-huh.
That's my mother's maiden name was Kullmann. So that's why I'm Kully. Then I could overhear a lot of the German conversations, which helped us so strategically.
So if you had gone by Oscar, the enemy would have been tipped off and wouldn't have spoken German so freely.
Yeah.
But you're in a combat situation.
Oh, yeah.
You've got the enemy firing at you, and you're firing at them.
Oh, yeah. One night I went through a night patrol with an American Indian, a corporal. I learned how to behave in the woods at night. He knew his way around. He's the one that taught me how to stay alive under those conditions.
Did you think you were going to stay alive?
I had doubts because we were getting attacked by tanks and all this sort of thing.
And how often? I mean, here you are.
Yeah.
You're back in Europe. You're so close to your family, in theory. Well, you still don't know what's happened to him.
Right.
How often did you think about that?
Oh, constantly, of course.
And you're fighting this regime that is the reason you left Germany.
Well, yeah. That had something to do with my motivation. I rewarded a Silver Star.
You mentioned the Silver Star. So this takes place long after the Battle of the Bulge, after you guys, by hook or by crook, made it across the Rhine, which wasn't easy for you. And you're in a foxhole looking out, and what do you see?
I see movement, and I know what people. And in a foxhole, I know it was on the German side, so it must have been Germans.
And how far away were they?
About 100 yards.
And how many of them were there?
Well, actually, two. The army said three, but it was only two.
And what did you decide to do?
I decided to take my radio off and crawl in a ditch with my carbine. That took me within, maybe 5 feet of that foxhole. I got out, cocked my carbine first, of course, jumped out of the foxhole and told them the Germans to surrender.
And you said that in German?
In German, yeah.
Yeah.
And they immediately surrendered. Didn't have to do anything.
But that's a long way to crawl. And if you had alerted them somehow with some mistake before you got there, they would have shot you.
Yeah, of course.
So this, you were taking your life into your hands by doing this.
There's no question about that.
So you tell them to surrender. They do. And you say, now you have to follow me back over here.
Yeah, I follow you.
You force them to go. Yeah, exactly. And you notice something in their possession.
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons you got the Silver Star.
Yeah.
Tell me what you found.
I found a German map that had marked clearly the coordinates of the guns that they were using to destroy the pontoon bridge.
And this is why you had such a hard time getting across the Rhine.
Yeah.
They kept blowing up the pontoon bridge or the engineers' efforts to build one.
Yeah.
You discover this map that's got the gun positions.
We radioed back immediately the coordinates of the gun position.
And what happened next?
The guns started firing.
Not just any guns.
No, those were the kinds of size that the battleships had. They were sitting on the other side of the Rhine. They had to be taken apart. There were no type of guns that couldn't move. There was emplacements.
That's why I'm asking, because when people hear big guns, they think we're talking about maybe at most a 155.
Yeah.
This is a 250?
50 millimeter, yeah. At least that's what they told me. And they had to be taken apart into three pieces to be transported.
But they know exactly where to fire because of the map that you found.
Yeah.
So here you are back in your position, and you've got quite a show to behold.
Yeah.
Tell me what you saw and what you heard.
Well, they told us to get our heads down in the foxhole in case there was a short round. And they started firing for 15 minutes, TOT, time on target, and the shells going overhead sounded like a freight train going overhead. And I learned later, I didn't see the place, but the friends of mine that saw the place where the guns were said they were totally destroyed.
I would imagine so, with artillery of that caliber heading their way. And that's significant. I mean, the reason they're giving you the Silver Star is by capturing these guys, finding that map, they're able to destroy all these guns.
Yeah.
That allows them to get across the Rhine, and it probably saved a lot of American lives.
Sure.
Did you realize that at the time, how significant that was?
No, I didn't. That was a job. You know, when you're on the front line, see what a job that needs to be done. You don't worry about anything else. They say, how can I get it done and save my life?
Well, that was your number one job, survive.
Yeah.
How hard was that? Can you give us a sense of what that daily reality was for you?
Well, you know, I was scared crawling in the ditch. I was trying not to make any noise, and especially I tried to prevent any of the grass that showed from moving. I did everything I could think of to be safe.
Yeah.
But I couldn't control everything, obviously.
But
as a matter of fact, when I got close, I heard him talk in German. So I knew when I was close, I didn't have to look up.
Uh-huh. And that's just one day. You're over there for quite a while. But on any day, I mean, you can be hit by German artillery, by machine gun fire, bombers coming overhead.
More mortar fire.
Well, that's what got you.
Yeah.
And we're going to hear about that when we come back. The close call that left Oscar Rice with a Purple Heart. We'll learn what piece of equipment he was carrying that would end up saving his life. And also why we're all fortunate his life was spared, because his decades in science and medicine have been incredibly productive and innovative. Check out photos of Dr. Rice then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they're going to your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.